So welcome to Narkees Bible Study on the 13th of January, 2018. And we're looking at Leviticus 22, verse 17 to 23:8, and that is coupled with the prophetic section, Isaiah 56, 7, following. So we don't quite have a cutoff point. We can discuss several options. One would be very short, and one would be a little longer. So we will start by reading through, and I am optimistic that we will be able to get to our Levitical section and our Isaiah section in the same morning. So maybe we'll start, if you're reading in English, read a chunk of verses, and then the next person will continue. We'll go around the table. So, Gemma, would you like to start?
Adonai spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and to his sons and to all Bnei Israel, and say to them, whoever is from the house of Israel or one of the outsiders in Israel who brings his offering, whether it be any of their vows or any of their freewill offerings that they present to Adonai for a burnt offering, for you to be accepted, you are to offer a male without blemish from the bulls, the sheep, or the goats. But whatever has a blemish, you're not to present, for it will not be acceptable on your behalf." I can't go on because I've got no paragraphs.
Okay.
21.
"When anyone offers a sacrifice of well-being to the Lord in fulfillment of a vow or as a freewill offering from the herd or from the flock, to be acceptable, it must be perfect. There shall be no blemish in it. Anything blind or injured or maimed or having a discharge or an itch or scabs, these sheep you shall not offer to the Lord, but any of them on the altar as offerings by fire to the Lord.
You may, however, present it as a freewill offering, an ox or a sheep that is deformed or stunted, but it will not be accepted in fulfillment of a vow. If you must not offer to the Lord, you must not offer to the Lord an animal whose testicles are bruised, crushed, torn, or cut. You must not do this in your own land. And you must not accept animals from the hand of a foreigner and offer them as the food of your God. They will not be accepted on your behalf because they are deformed or have defects."
And the Lord said to Moses, "When a bull or sheep or goat is born, it shall remain 7 days with its mother. And from the eighth day on, it shall be acceptable as an offering by fire to the Lord. And whether the mother is a cow or a ewe, you shall not kill both her and her young in one day. And when you sacrifice a sacrifice of thanksgiving to the Lord, you shall sacrifice it so that you may be accepted. It shall be eaten on the same day. You shall leave none of it until morning on the world." 31.
So maybe we'll circle back to Gemma.
"So you're to keep my mitzvot and to do them. I am Adonai. You must not profane my holy name, for I will be made holy among Bnei Israel. I am Adonai who makes you holy, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am Adonai. Then Adonai spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Bnei Israel and tell them, these are the appointed moedim of Adonai, which you are to proclaim to be holy convocations, my moedim. Work may be done for 6 days, but the seventh day is a Shabbat of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You're to do no work. It's a Shabbat to Adonai in all your dwellings."
Nice.
"These are the appointed festivals of the Lord, the holy convocations which you shall celebrate at the time appointed for them. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at twilight, there shall be a Passover offering to the Lord. And on the 15th day of the same month, it's the festival of unleavened bread to the Lord. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall not work at your occupations. For 7 days you shall present the Lord's offerings by fire. On the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation. You shall not work at your occupations."
I like that. What translation are you using there?
NRSV.
NRSV.
And Jim, do you have the David Stern or what?
No, I have the Tree of Life version. It's the name of Sionic one.
It's nice. I heard some nice translations. Made me happy.
I have three.
So, what have we just read about? If you could summarize it. What?
Specific laws, laws.
Okay, that's a little too general. Laws, those laws.
Sacrificing.
Okay, we're getting better. We're getting better.
The quality of sacrifice.
The quality of sacrifice.
What is to be sacrificed? Who, what, how, where?
Who, what, how, where? Exactly. Okay, so who is hearing these laws? Why? A mistake. Thought it was either an emergency or a mistake. Hello? Okay. Who is hearing these laws?
The priest.
Who else?
Moses.
The first verse, 17?
Moses.
Sorry?
Moses.
Well, Moses hears it from God, but it says God spoke to Moses saying,
Speak to Aaron
and his sons. Who
are
they?
And to all Bnei Israel.
Okay. So Moses is supposed to speak to the priests and to all of Israel. As we've been going through Leviticus, because this is a technical book, it's always good to remember who is being talked to. Because if you're the priest, you need to know how to do sacrifices. And there are parts of it that not everybody needs to know. That's your job. Like if you study medicine, you're a doctor, you know certain things not everybody needs to know. But there's some things everybody needs to know who even isn't a doctor. Like, it's good to wash your hands. You know, when you're sick, don't share food. You know, keep this away. So what you're about to hear, what we read, are rules that both the priests need to know and the people need to know.
Because they're bringing the sacrifices.
They're bringing the sacrifices. Exactly.
They have to examine their
They need to know what out of their animals is appropriate and why. Or at least what is appropriate. Okay, not only Israelis. So this is an important point too. So first, let's also look at, so it says, anyone from the house of Israel or from the Ger. This is what the name I call my husband, Ger. And it works well because he isn't originally from Israel and he lives here. And his name is Gary, which is a Scottish name, but here I use the Hebrew equivalent. Which some translators translate stranger. I have foreigners in Israel in the NET Bible. What are some other translations of Ger?
Aliens residing in Israel.
Aliens residing. Okay, normally residing translates toshav, the resident.
I've got outsiders in Israel.
Outsiders in Israel.
Sojourners.
Gotta love that word.
Yeah.
Not many of us sojourn these days. But we're all very familiar with it in the Bible. So, this word ger is definitely someone who is not from the house of Israel, because it's contrasted with the house of Israel. But if you follow this word, it is not just any foreigner. It is a foreigner who is in this land and is somehow connected to the people of Israel. They're interacting.
Living among.
Uh-huh. Yes. And if you read the book of Deuteronomy, they are included in many of the legal systems. They are very much a part of society. And you could differentiate a bit. There's another word in here. Nohri is also a foreigner. But if you follow Nohri, it's a different level of foreigner. So if you think in today's world, you would think of the ger as someone living in the land who's not Israeli. I'm putting it to modern terms for us. A nohri would be like a tourist or a businessman coming in for an occasion and then leaving again.
This is what alien doesn't...
Well, alien to me, I think of Mars. So it's not...
I'm from Lamar's Isles.
What's the song? I'm an alien? Isn't that a song? I'm an alien. I'm a legal alien.
And the legal alien is somebody who comes, let's say, in Europe, who comes into Europe and is not part of society. That's the whole battle.
Yeah.
Sure.
Not identified.
An alien
or
somebody
so
out.
If alien means
in.
That for you, then use that word. But for me,
right.
I think of science fiction movies.
Right.
And
yeah.
So I would think that the traveling businessman for Nohri communicates more to me than alien. And the guerre, a foreign resident, communicates something to me.
A resident who's not of your ethnic group.
Right.
But he's a permanent...
Permanent...
He's a permanent fixture in that land. He's
yeah.
Not, he's not foreign to that land. He's from that land.
What are you, Gary? Danny.
What am I? In today's terms?
He's a guerre.
Yeah, I would be a guerre.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is today... In Judaism, they call a ger. What is a ger? Who knows?
Ger toshav.
No, today in Judaism, when they say ger, what do they mean?
Convert
to Judaism.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they read these texts totally differently.
That's not really integrated, is it?
No, but it's an interesting progression because a ger, if you think through it, if all these laws are for the ger as well, it's almost like they have become part of Israel, but
so
not quite.
So
they're in some kind of pre-conversion status.
But even you're saying now in conversion status, when they're converted.
No, so now Judaism has taken it all the way, where like a ger is someone seconded to Israel who wasn't naturally from the sons of Israel and joined in. And so, let's say you take the Jewish people out of this land.
He's not from Israel's bloodline, but he has been grafted in.
Right. So you take Israel out of this land, what secunds you to Israel anymore? If you're living in Europe, what would second you to Israel? Who would be a ger? It would be someone who was a foreigner who wanted to be part, starts coming to synagogue, starts... And so you see how the connection was made to the convert. Because the only way to be part of Israel... in Europe would have been to convert because you don't have a land situation. Where the original context, there was actually a land situation where you're living together and you could be part of society simply because you're there.
But I mean, if you follow it through in the modern terms, I've forgotten that's what it is. People who convert and become Jews, become part of society, it also involves all sorts of other things like
sure.
all the rules about marriage and divorce.
Sure.
And birth and death and so on. So, I mean, if you are a ger, you start as a ger, it's actually slight, I think it's slightly nasty term if somebody has completed their conversion.
Right, well, that's a problem. If either you are or you're not a convert. If you've converted, you should be
a Jew.
Ben Israel then,
yeah.
You know, like,
that's what,
right.
If you're
that's
eternally a ger, then,
yeah.
Then it's a bit problematic. Also, there's another subtle thing going on. If you read through the commandments about the ger, you will find that there's certain obligations of Israel toward the ger. And if you say that the ger is someone converted, you really only in the end just have to help those in your circle anyway. And I think that's not the spirit of the original laws, was help the people that are outside your circle. And so I think it kind of
even here,
makes
though,
it too small.
It's still... more specific though than like just foreigners who are natives that live among you that aren't Israelis, because it says that they're presenting offerings.
Exactly.
Like,
so that's
isn't it also the ger who has to be circumcised to take part in Passover?
Right.
So you could choose as a ger to be circumcised and then really be like part of the Passover celebration, etc., etc. So like that's definitely a step farther than like today said. Like
yeah,
you wouldn't be a ger, right? Because you're not. We're not doing those things. Like.
Or maybe we are. Yeah, right. Well, it's an interesting question. And what is this category? And I think that's what led them to go to the convert because
right.
of the Passover law, where a ger, they can eat Passover with you as long as you're circumcised.
Right.
Now, what sacrifices are we talking about here that the ger is making?
Burnt offerings.
What?
Offerings, burnt offerings.
Well, yeah, it's when you say burnt offering.
Free will.
It's a
vow.
A fellowship offering.
Vow.
Okay, so we do have three mentions. I'd say the vow offering,
mm-hmm.
the free will, which is like what's a better word for that?
Promise?
Like, it's extra. It's just you want to be generous.
Like a gift offering or something?
Yeah. Like, when in the New Testament context, people talk about tithes and offerings.
Like
tithes are what you should do just anyway, and then offerings are a bonus.
Thanksgiving offering.
I'm going to call it vow offerings, and then bonus.
So in the Hebrew, nivotam, like
from generosity. It's just because, you know, you didn't make a vow to the Lord. Okay, well, let's deal them. What's a vow? What's a neder?
It's an oath.
It's a particular oath. What kind of a deal is a neder? Okay, I'll just say.
I'll do this, God, if you do this for me.
There you go.
So it's like bargaining with the Almighty about.
If you do X, I'll do Y. God views these very seriously when you read through the Bible. If you make a neder and don't fulfill it, that is sin. So all your little mutterings like, oh Lord, if you only do this, I'm going to do this. He hears that, and that is like, that's binding. So like you...
Jephthah's daughter.
Yiftach's daughter, or in the boat. No, Jonah, in the boat. Who makes nedarim?
Mm-hmm.
Who makes them?
The sailors, I think.
The sailors, those pagan sailors, make nedarim to who?
Their gods.
Well, they call out to their gods, but they don't make nedarim to their gods. In the end, they make them to Adonai.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
If you,
Vayidru nedarim.
If you save us, we'll believe in you, sort of thing.
Wait.
Yeah, basically. Yes, yes. Yeah, that's the crazy thing.
Yeah, because Jonah has already said that this is his punishment from Adonai.
He says he's running away from Adonai.
He says he's running away, that's why they're in the mess that they're in.
Right.
So they make this neder, which is, you know, okay, you save us, and we'll believe in you.
Now, I think Meek is going to check on whether I just said something right or wrong. Whether the nedarim are specifically l'Adonai. Is that what you're doing?
Oh, no, I know.
Okay.
No, I was looking at that. There's another one that Saul does where he says that no one is allowed to eat until the sun goes down. And then God even takes that, even though it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And he takes that very seriously.
Yeah.
But it makes sense because it's like, God, if you do X, so contingent upon you, then I will do Y. And it's like, well, I always do what I say.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to do it,
so if God does it,
you better follow through.
You have to follow through.
God, if I do this, will you do this?
Otherwise, it's like you're not acknowledging that God actually did it.
Yeah, or you're just like, okay, I've got free.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah. And in the same way that these pagans made a neder l'Adonai, it was basically acknowledging
your God.
God did this. God did this storm, and we're acknowledging that. So to whatever level of faith they got to, it was a step in that direction. And it's interesting because here it's the ger. Who knows? Something happened. Let's say a ger's slave got deathly sick. And he decides to go to the temple and make a sacrifice. Or maybe he makes a vow. Well, who knows? If the god of this land will do something for me, I will do this. Okay, so he makes a neder. And here we have instruction that God's anticipating that a foreigner would do that. And so this is how you should do it. When a foreigner makes this kind of neder, this is how it should be done.
And that happened after the situation. I promise I will do this.
Right. If my slave gets better, I will take an offering to you. So his slave gets better.
Mm-hmm.
Now he needs to take an offering to God. And so that's this kind of offering. Now, then there's another kind that this foreigner could make too, and it's simply bonus. Like, I just, out of the goodwill of my heart, I just want to thank God. I just want to give something to him. And so that's this nedava. And both of these, you notice, are ola. What is an ola? What kind of offering?
Burnt.
Okay, so to us who don't make, to we who don't make offerings, burnt offering means, I mean, all offerings are burnt, right? They're all on a altar.
Oh.
Burnt means it's all burnt, right? So it's more generous because you don't get anything from it. You don't get to eat. And who else doesn't get to eat?
The priests
don't get to eat. Nobody eats this offering. Only God. It all gets burnt up to God. So it's probably the top most generous offering you could do because there is no benefit to anybody else. It's just for God. That's the olah. Okay, so when a foreigner or anyone else in the land does these kinds of offerings, this is how it's supposed to be done. Now, what do you guys have in verse 19, your first line of verse 19?
To be accepted.
It is to be acceptable? Is that what you have?
You can't be
your
accepted.
For your?
In your mind, is like to be like enjoyed by God.
To be enjoyed.
By God.
Yeah. It's interesting. So I'm going to write this ratzon. For your ratzon. And this is an interesting little word. Today we use this another form of this word all the time in Hebrew. Rotze, rotza. I want it. It's just our generic word for I want something, right? But in the Bible, it wasn't the generic word for I want. What was the generic word for I want?
Hafetz.
There you go. Now, both of these words can be used in a non-generic form as well. We have, hafetz, like desire. There's different levels and nuances. But ratzon, you have this idea of will. The will of the Lord, Ratzon Adonai. You have an idea of pleasurable, it's something enjoyed, right, fitting. You have the idea of acceptability. So in the sense of an offering, to qualify, to be acceptable, to be the thing that makes God happy. That's Ratzon. And for an offering to be an offering, it has to be ratzon. So it's part of this whole
what's the
bigger concept
phrase when somebody does something or you do something to somebody and you say ratzon rav.
Ratzon with great pleasure.
With great pleasure, with
yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's the same.
But you can also ask politely, birtzoni la'asot et zeh. It's my desire to do this. It's just
right.
A fancy way of saying I'd like to.
Right.
So there are different ways to use it today as well. But
it makes me happy to do it. But ratzon rav, I'm happy to do it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's pleasing.
Yeah.
Some people say pleasing, acceptable. It's both of those things together. And then in verse 21, what other sacrifice is mentioned?
Fellowship offering.
So, what is a fellowship offering? Okay, you have peace.
Well-being.
I like well-being because shalem is whole. Shlamim are whole. Z, plural of shalem. And who eats one of these offerings? A shalem, a peace or a well-being offering.
And also the one who offers it.
Absolutely.
And
the one who offers it, a little bit goes to the priests. Most of it goes to the one offering. So shlamim, you can think of a holy barbecue. Someone would go to the temple to rejoice before the Lord, bring his family, they're all going to eat from that meat.
And that's the only time they're going to have it. Because you have to sacrifice all meat.
Basically, it depends if you're reading Deuteronomy or Leviticus. And
not necessarily.
Well, Deuteronomy makes exceptions.
Think that every
Right. Deuteronomy makes exceptions for eating meat when you're not close to the temple. But if you're in Jerusalem, you're close to the temple. So pretty much any meat, you just go up to the temple and make an offering. The thing I can't explain well in this verse is lefale neder. Some of you translated to fulfill a vow, a neder.
Yeah.
But it's not really the word to fulfill. So it's interesting. It has this Pele Yoetz, you guys know, is a wonderful counselor. That's from the same root as lefale. To one up your vow? I don't know.
Do you think it's connected just to the idea that this is an offering that you're basically going to have a big party?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say a vow is fulfilled, something that his daughter's healed or something,
mm-hmm.
and he just says, this is awesome, the whole family, we're going to go to the temple, we're going to eat, we're going to celebrate with
right.
the Lord in thanks, versus the burnt offering, which you just give and it's
right.
know,
yeah.
all gone.
Maybe.
Truly go.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting little terms you have to stick in your mind and start thinking about and searching through.
Yeah.
We had a peace offering for the fulfillment of special vow.
Uh-huh. So it is interesting because before we mentioned that both of these, a neder and a nedava, were mentioned. And the result is an ola, a whole burnt offering. Now you have the same two mentioned, neder, nedava, but it's shlamim. So either one could have been your vow. You could have vowed to present God the whole thing, or you could have vowed to bring a shlamim, where basically it's a holy barbecue. So in either context, the point is, what kind of animal, in this context, the people need to know what kind of animal is acceptable. What counts? Because if it doesn't count, then it's as if you haven't done it. And what's the key at the end of verse 21?
Maybe it's even worse.
Must be no defect.
No defect. Mum. Mum is any kind of flaw. Of course, we're looking for physical flaws. And in case that wasn't clear enough what a mum is, you have a bunch of verses to clarify. 22 and following.
Blind,
broken bone, mutilated. Some of them aren't as clear as others. Charutz, yabelet, garav, yalefet. So you can't bring those to God. And you can't make a fire offering for them. Okay. And it goes into more detail in verse 23, which I find interesting. Either in the cow category or in the sheep category, it goes on to say...
And that's female, right? Cow,
well,
cow or ewe.
Yeah, the word it uses, shol and se. There, shol is often translated ox, literally ox, but it really just means a category. There's like the big cattle and the little flocks. So whether you're talking about cows or sheep, this is the one. It's not specifying whether it could be a female or male. Yes. In biblical Hebrew, it's a category. And se is a category of sheep and goats. It's not only baby. Like, technically, se is a baby lamb. That's what we think of. But that apparently developed in Hebrew more post-biblical, maybe Jesus' time, maybe a little later, I forget.
I said that because I read 28, it says cow or ewe.
Yeah.
Whether the mother is a cow, right? The mother cow or ewe.
But it's actually more general than that. Whether
right.
oxen or flock, you could say. It's very similar to bakar and tzon. You got the big cattle, you got the little. So in either category, and what are all the things that... Okay, so here you have an exception. Sorry, verse 23 is an exception. So in two things, it's not considered to be a mum, but only for the nedava. So if you're bringing a bonus offering, you can bring something that's sarua and kalut, whatever that means. Here they've translated it a limb too long or a limb slightly stunted. Those are still considered to be whole and intact. But you can't bring it as a nedir. Because it won't be what?
Not be acceptable.
Acceptable. So there's that same context, that same word keeps popping up.
And then it goes into verse 24, more things that would not be acceptable. And I find verse 24 really interesting. Because in Hebrew, it doesn't actually even specify the testicles part. But it says, ma'uch, like smushed, chatut, crushed, natuk, like snapped off, and charut, cut. Many, many, very specific. And these are all about testicles. And so it immediately makes me think, was there a practice? Because you think of other religions and fertility cults. And so... Yeah, maybe there was some other practice. I don't know about it, but maybe it existed that they specifically mutilated the fertile part of the body as some part of ritual. And so God is saying here that you may not do that to your animals that you're sacrificing to me. He wants the animal in its wholeness, not mutilated.
So he's saying, God is saying, you're not to do this mutilation.
Right.
I've always read it as, if it's mutilated, it's not perfect.
Well, there's both categories, right? Up above, it was, if there's any defect in it, it's not perfect.
So there's a suggestion here that it's possible that you might do it, and then it's, which has got some echo with some pagan practice.
Well, first of all,
possibly.
You're offering an animal like this, and then you shouldn't be doing this to the animal.
Yeah.
So it's basically saying two different things.
Again, these are cryptic sayings because it's all implied. It's giving it in the adjective form. Here's this animal. It is smushed of testicle. Okay, well, how did its testicles get smushed? That's the question.
Right.
Did you do it on purpose? Or did somehow it just... I don't know how it would just happen, you know? It seems very...
Well, there's so much detail that it doesn't sound like it covers accidents, but it must cover more. You know, like food sacrificed to idols, so this must... It makes you wonder what they did with...
Especially since it's the fertility thing.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder.
What year are we talking about?
What year?
How old?
We're talking ancient. We're talking ancient.
How old was the world at this point? How much went before that? You know, that they might have had these cultic things going on. 1,000 years, hundreds of years.
I mean, cultic things have been going on since Cain and Abel.
Right.
Right?
And
so
it's still going strong in many places.
And the fact that it says, in your land, you should not do this, makes me feel like it's part of, like, you need to be different in your land. I know other people in their lands do it. Here, we're not going to do that. That's what it sounds like to me. And again, these are all, I'm reading into it because I'm trying to make sense of where all these specific adjectives are coming from and how this would happen to an animal in the first place. It doesn't seem like he's just jumping over a fence and this is what happened.
Max, these are all given after Sinai, within...
Yeah, these are laws given...
Not many years after, just after Sinai.
Right.
Is it the law that you shouldn't sterilize your animals? That it's not God's...
It's interesting, isn't it? That's a question. I don't know if there is a law.
I believe it is.
But you could extract that law from here.
Yeah, but...
Certainly, any animal that you bring to God can't be sterilized, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It has to represent the animal in its wholeness. And we read earlier about priests.
Did you feel like that never be able to sterilize your cat?
Our cat who has disappeared.
Oh, really?
I actually did. I don't like the concept. Because it doesn't represent life, generosity, the fullness of life.
What, sterilizing the cat?
Yeah. But practically speaking, it can be a necessity.
I'm sorry, I'm all for it in Jewish.
I know, I mean... No, again, there's a theoretical consideration, and then there's a practical. So we did sterilize our cat, but theoretically...
I'm a hog farmer from Iowa.
I had a problem.
And every hawk was cut.
Yeah.
There was a woman in my old time who would sterilize the cats because, you know, it goes against Genesis. But they would give it birth control because it wasn't permanent.
Interesting. I've heard of that too. Birth control pills.
They didn't want their cats.
They put their cats on birth control pills instead of permanently sterilizing them.
We gave our
very interesting.
She knew how to swallow a glass of milk.
Rather than cut
it.
Same way you give any drug.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, so
this is a very deep thought about this, isn't it? The whole concept of scripture is that man is to go on producing, you're to produce families, you're to do this, the animals have to go on producing, you're to do this, you're to. And so the concept of being sterilized or infertile, whichever word, is not something that's here because.
Yeah. It doesn't represent the wholeness and the fullness.
Everything, I mean,
creation.
And everything which blocks the production. This is why homosexuality is wrong. Because it's not producing the next generation. It's not whatever.
Right.
I mean, there may be other issues as well.
Right.
But this whole concept of I am going to produce, I'm going to give, I'm going to give them, I'm going to bring the Mashiach.
And the important differentiation is that this is a representative category that people are looking at to bring in a special way into God's realm. And so it doesn't mean, like Isaiah talks to the people who are
eunuchs
and says, don't look down on yourself. Right. Don't think God doesn't care about you because you're a eunuch or that you can't have a relationship with him. It's just you do not represent a certain wholeness to the people.
Right.
And so he's called certain, there's certain rules to represent wholeness in sacrifices and in people when you're in the temple, in this sanctified area. But it doesn't mean that you have greater value than the other people. You're just representative.
And the original thing was and fill the earth, but the earth is full.
That's true,
you know,
too.
I mean, there was a scarcity.
That's true, too. Do you view the original multiply, fill the earth, take control over it? Okay, well, we've accomplished that.
Extremely.
Right. You don't need to continue to populate it in large amounts. They're both arguments. And so then the rabbinics, this is, I'm jumping back to Genesis 1:27, where it says, so what is it? Hillel, one of them said, as long as you have one son, you've done your job. And the other says, no, you have to have one son and one daughter, which would mean, I'm not done, but I am done. So it's difficult. What if you keep having kids and they're all boys? You know, what are you going to do about that? So
you follow Hillel.
So you follow Hillel then. One son's enough. So now, then we come back to this Ben Nechar, which was interesting to me. Because is Ben Nechar meaning this person who's in this category? Or is it literally the son of the person in the category? Like, was your father a traveling businessman and somehow he ended up staying here and now you were born here, which makes you a ger, right? Or is it just someone from the category of traveling businessman, nechav? But you're not supposed to give anything you got from them, from this traveling businessman, because there is it somehow profanes God, or there might be a mum in it, there might be a defect. Or is it because it's coming from him that it's defected? I'm not quite sure. If anyone has a thought.
You can't offer anything from them, or if it just can't be from those categories?
It says,
Mikol ele.
Umiyad ben nechal lo takrivu el lechem Elohechem.
Mikol ele. Like,
right?
from all these
previous categories, you can't use meat that you got from a traveling businessman. Because it is corrupted.
Mumbam.
There's a defect in it.
Yeah. But that sounds like,
or you could read the key if it is corrupted and there's a mum in it. There's several ways you can interpret this verse. But again, lo yeratzu lechem. It will not be acceptable for you. So again, all this category is trying to help the people know what is considered acceptable to God. And it might not be what you first think. And again, if you own a bunch of flock, it would be easy, if you have defective flock, it would be like a win-win. It's like, I can't use this anyway. Why don't I just give it to God? It can be an offering. It's like the easy way out. And God's basically saying, no, that is not an offering. You're just getting rid of what you want to get rid of anyway. So if you're giving away clothes and you were going to give it away anyway, don't pat yourself on the back that you gave it to somebody else. It's like, you were giving away anyway. You give away something you want to wear. That's an offering.
So maybe that's the reason why you have all these ma'ug v'chatut v'netuk v'charut. Because it focuses on reproduction. And reproduction is not possible. So you're...
So you're like, why do I need this anyway? Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So I'll just offer that to God.
Right. And then the folks is no, especially those.
Right. Those don't count. What counts is a totally whole, legitimate, you have to give this thing up. That counts. And then you have the interesting verse in 27. Again, whether it's in the cattle or the flock, when a little kid is born, an ez, it's supposed to be 7 days under the mom, and then you can give it. So very specific when you can offer it. And that you can't offer the mother and the kid on the same day. And again, it uses shor or se. And it reminds me of the command not to boil a lamb in its mother's milk. There's something sacred about the relationship of the parent and the child, that it would be like sacrilege to kill them both on the same day. That's how I take it. But it's interesting that the boiling in the milk of the mother isn't mentioned in this selection, but several ones that have the same idea, that you're actually trying to think of the animal, so it seems, or the concept.
I've always understood that this boiling kid in a mother's milk, which is the root of halakha kashrut, I think,
yeah,
was actually some sort of pagan practice. Now,
I tend to think that as well.
And if that's the case, then it may well be that this whole thing about sacrificing the mother with its child, with its new.
Yeah.
Is linked in the same way. I really don't know. You know, you can,
because if you have a bunch of flocks and you have a new lamb that you're going to sacrifice or cook or anything, well, where are you going to get the milk from? Probably the mom who just gave birth, because
right. That's
who produces milk. And so it would be very easy to be cooking your lamb in its own mother's milk.
Right.
You would kind of have to go out of your way to make sure that doesn't happen. And this is interesting too, because think about it practically. If you can't slaughter a mother or their child on the same day, you actually have to keep track of each of your cattle and know exactly which egel or which
lamb.
Baby goat came from which mom.
Right.
And this is definitely, if you go to Africa, everybody knows their cattle.
Right.
You know, that's the one with the two spots here, and that's this one. They give names for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know which kid comes from which. Today we don't really do that.
I remember asking a Ugandan pastor, he's actually now the Archbishop of Uganda, and I said to him years ago, how many kids have you got, Henry? And he said, are my children like cows that I should count them?
Like, what, cows are here and then children? Funny.
You know how many cats you've got. But
but all of these rules, I think the caption is in the bottom, verse 32. You can't profane them. You can't, like, disregard them, because that would not be keeping God holy. It's all about God's holiness. And he's the one that separated them, brought them out of Egypt, in verse 33. And so maybe behind some of these is a subtle message, like you can't just do what you've always been doing, and you can't just do what you see other people doing. It's got to be something I condone and say, yes, you can do it this way. Okay, so a bunch of specifics. We also mentioned the todah, the thank offering, was the last offering. And so we have a bunch of categories, and then all of a sudden we have seven verses of another category. What is it?
Festivals.
And a whole nother ball of wax. Mikrae Kodesh, which Gemma read for us, Holy Convocation. What other words do you have in verse 2 of Leviticus 23?
I have appointed Moadim.
Okay, Moadim are different. The appointed times, the word before that. You will call them holy callings. That's what it says. Holy callings.
Holy convocations.
Or holy readings. So does that mean it's a holy day that people are called together? Or is it just that you have called it holy and everybody knows that? Or do you actually read holy readings during this day? What do you think, Nick?
I don't know.
It's an interesting question to me. Because all of those things you could actually see in that word. And then you have the Shabbat. 6 days you do your work, your melacha, and the seventh day it's a Shabbat. Mikra Kodesh. It's called holy, or you call a holy meeting, or you read something holy. Mikra Kodesh. Kol melacha. Any melacha you can't do because it's Shabbat. And then it goes on, specifies, and later on it says, Kol melechet avodah. Did you guys see that during the Pesach, verse 8? Kol melechet avodah lo ta'asu. And in English, when you first come to Israel, you wonder, how can you consider driving a car work? It's more work to walk, right? Is this a question people ask? And it's because we're reading the Bible in English, and we have this word work. And when you read it in Hebrew, there's a word melacha, and there's a word avodah. And avodah can be work, and it can be worship, that it doesn't work in English. Melacha is also work. And obviously, God's not going to forbid worship on Shabbat, so avodah doesn't really work there, no pun intended. But melacha is forbidden on Shabbat. And so what is melacha? That's this whole big issue. What is melacha? What qualifies? So some people say it's anything craft or creation oriented, cutting, writing, like there's all these lists. Or you could say, as Gemma, what did you have in verse 8?
What is the Hebrew word?
Melacha.
Exodus 20. Verse
in Exodus 20?
What is the word?
Melacha, melacha, melacha. And when Jonah is asked,
I have to do no regular work.
No regular work, or no occupational work.
Right.
I would kind of go with that translation, because in Jonah they ask, what is your melacha? What is your craft? What is your occupation? And he is a prophet. So I would say melacha is no,
no
occupational.
No prophesying for Jonah.
There you go. Yeah, it gets weird when you're the priest. What does that mean? Because the priests are functioning on Shabbat too. So what can the priest do? His occupation is priest. Does that mean he can't cut on Shabbat? Or, like, there's all these ideas, and I don't have an answer because I haven't thought through that well enough.
Paul made a difference between Shabbat, the fourth commandment, and Shabbat of those feasts.
Right, and
those
so
feasts are
Melechet Avodah.
Shabbat, it is not the weekly Shabbat.
Yes.
Which is the fourth.
Yes,
Shabbat.
There seems to be a differentiation for, because it's mentioned two feasts. You have the Pesach, and right afterwards the Feast of Unleavened Bread that lasts a week. And so during that time, it's not the same kind of Shabbat as a full Shabbat. It's a Shabbat from occupational work. So that's why we have this concept today, Chol HaMoed, where you can still, it's like a partial Shabbat. Even though I'm not quite sure that that satisfies these restrictions. But, now, get this in your mind, we are going to go to the parasha, because we got
to
get there.
You mean to
the Haftarah? Yes, thank you. I'm glad you're all awake and listening. I will bring them to my holy mountain. I will make them happy in the temple where people pray to me. Their burnt offerings and sacrifices will be accepted on my altar. For my temple will be known as a temple where all nations may pray. Or you may know it. Who can quote me this verse in other versions.
House of prayer for all peoples, all nations.
Yes. And it's interesting because look back up, like they quote it from verse 7, right? And we'll get to why in a second. But if you look back up at the beginning of the chapter, promote justice, do what is right, for I'm ready to deliver you. I'm ready to vindicate you openly. The people who do this will be blessed, the people who commit themselves to obedience, who observe the Sabbath and do not defile it, who refrain from doing anything that is wrong. So there you have a connection with the not defiling the Sabbath. From that links back to our parasha. No foreigner who becomes a follower of the Lord should say, the Lord will certainly exclude me from his people. And it uses ben nechar, which is also what we had in our parasha. The Lord will certainly exclude me from his people. The eunuch should not say, look, I'm like a dried up tree. This is what we were talking about earlier. For this is what the Lord says. For the eunuchs who observe my Shabbat and choose what pleases me and are faithful to my covenant, I will set up within my temple and my walls a monument. And what is that? Yad Vashem. It's called Yad Vashem. Yad is it can be a memorial, and Shem is a name. So a monument that will be better than sons and daughters. I will set up a permanent monument for them that will remain. As for the foreigners who become followers of the Lord and serve him, and what are we talking about? Bnei HaNechar, sons of the traveling businessmen, right? Who love the name of the Lord and want to be his servants, all who observe the Sabbath and do not defile it, and who are faithful to my covenant, I will bring them to my holy mountain. I will make them happy in the temple where people pray to me. So that's where we enter in. And it mentions...
The first bit that you've just read is really a complete tie-up.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
So it's interesting that they jump straight to verse 7.
Right.
But tell me, guys, why did they jump to verse 7? What's in verse 7 that so strongly links to our parasha?
The burnt offerings and sacrifices will be acceptable.
Acceptable. It's the ratzon. There's a ratzon. And now, whose burnt offerings are going to be acceptable? B'nei HaNechar. Remember, in our selection, the meat from a Ben Nechar can't even be brought by the sons of Israel to the temple. And somehow now, they're going to be acceptable on God's altar. Because my house, a house of prayer, will be called for all the peoples. Very interesting, right?
It's 2 and 6. Because it's the foreigners who join... What's this for foreigners? Is they join themselves to the Lord.
That's right.
They minister to him. They love the name of Adonai.
Yes.
And to be his servants.
Uh-huh.
They keep Shabbat and hold fast my covenant. That's a huge chunk.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you do all that...
Yes.
Then you can bring yourself...
Not, you're right. Not just any old foreigner out there.
That's
absolutely.
Right. That's right.
I kind of can see myself in that category. But it's interesting. Sorry, what?
Has it been fulfilled, you're saying?
I don't know. You could say the fact that we're all sitting here might be part of this. My ancestors were barbarians in Norway. They probably drank blood, you know? They certainly did all kinds of things. They didn't know the Torah. And yet here I am in Jerusalem. You know, how did that happen? I believe that I'm part of God's covenant through faith.
Right.
I wasn't born into it, but, you know, I'm grafted in. So I don't know that this hasn't been fulfilled. I think it's certainly being fulfilled.
It has been.
Has been? I don't know. But it's also interesting, just keep this in mind, the connection between prayer and sacrifice. Did you see that? He has both things together. Their sacrifices are acceptable, right? And their prayer. The temple is going to be known for its prayer.
Or both need to be acceptable.
Yeah, there's some kind of equation between prayer and sacrifice here, and we see that in the New Testament.
Yeah.
Once the temple is destroyed, we see in Judaism too. What happens? What is your offering? Prayers.
Right.
Go read Revelations. It's the prayers of the saints. They're the incense going up.
It also can be that your prayer does not come from the heart, so you're standing on corners and showing off your titsits and whatever, and repeating words.
That's a dangerous sentence you just said, but we'll leave it.
Also, Jesus said that his house will be called the house
that's
of
the
prayer.
Prayer. Yeah. 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 And then you could also say maybe part of this idea of being acceptable requires the inner heart, requires the prayer. The offering and the prayer have to be together. Just like a vow is made. That's something you say in your heart or your mind. And then you have to follow through and do it. So you could say there's this link to be acceptable. You need prayer and offering together. An offering without prayer maybe is not so acceptable. But there is this emphasis that God's house is going to be known as a house of prayer. Not actually, it's not famous for its offerings, it's famous for its prayer. That's very fascinating to me. And it seems to me, when I read it, you have to think about this more, but it seems like it's actually even being emphasized. Ki veti bet tfila yikare. It doesn't say ki yikare beti bet tfila. Ki veti bet tfila yikare lechol ha'amim. And so it seems that Isaiah here is being very progressive. And how do all the other nations fit into God's plan? And he sees this day when there's like, when God's temple will be famous for prayer, even more than for sacrifice. And I know if you go to the temple, Southern Steps, what's the museum there? What's it called?
Davidson
Center. They have a little video, and it talks about, it quotes Josephus, I guess, how in their day it was a wonder that there would be a temple without statues. It was considered...
Without statues?
Yeah, because no temple in the world would not have statues.
Mm-hmm.
And here's this grand structure, and there's not a single statue in there.
Right.
Just this altar and, like, space. And it was really, it was a world wonder for that. But so it's that same idea of the temple will be famous for its prayer. It doesn't have these other... maybe things that other temples have. So that might actually even connect these passages as well, that these are rules that are setting the people apart in how you worship God. And you're not just doing the normal fertility cult, this and that other people are doing. You're being set apart, and what you're doing is symbolizing something a little different. And it catches people's attention. And I do see we're out of time and over time. Does anyone have a final thought on what Isaiah 56:7 impacts you with?
I think it's a beginning of continuation.
7 and 6. End of 6.
Sorry?
Who are they?
Well, that's why you have to read back the they.
All those who keep the Sabbath.
Right. There's a whole list of things, including keeping of the Sabbath.
Covenant.
Yes. And holding on to God's covenant. So that's interesting, too, because God made a covenant with Israel. And this verse is implying that people who are totally foreigners are going to be able to hold on to this covenant somehow.
Right.
They're going to be able to be part of it.
It says the sons of the stranger.
Yeah, the sons of strangers, and it's using the furthest, if you're making circles of strangeness, it's using the term that's the furthest circle from the center.
And there's a continuation in 8. God gathers the dispersed of Israel. He declares, I will gather still others to him, to those already gathered. So the son already here, but that gathering is going on.
Yeah.
Who keeps the Sabbath in this?
And then it kind of shifts, but that's enough for today. We'll say Shabbat Shalom. You can chew on this. And may it bring blessing and fruit in your life.